Welcome to Insight Live at Noon with a rebroadcast at 7 p.m. California is taking on a Southwest neighbor when it comes to reproductive rights following the Arizona State Supreme Court's ruling in favor of a near-total abortion ban. Ahead on Insight, we'll learn how California could soon allow Arizona doctors to provide abortion care in the Golden State. Also, the Gold Rush city of Placerville took the national spotlight. Six restaurants competed in Guy Fieri's Food Network show, Best Bite in Town. The episode aired this weekend, and some of the competitors will join us about the experience. Finally, the temperatures are warming, and it kicks off an annual tradition along the lower American River, rafting season. American River Raft Rentals joins us about their opening day and celebrating its 50th anniversary. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. That's all coming up today on Insight. First, here's the news. From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. California has long drawn a bold line in the sand when it comes to reproductive rights in response to the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. In the nearly 2 years since, Democratic leaders have moved forward to make California a sanctuary state for those seeking an abortion across the country. It is codified into our state's constitution. And California even has a website, abortion.ca.gov, that offers support and resources regardless if you live in the state. Governor Gavin Newsom and the Legislative Women's Caucus have taken another adversarial step forward in response to Arizona's potential ban on nearly all abortions. Earlier this month, Arizona's state Supreme Court ruled in favor of a Civil War-era ruling that bans abortions in nearly all cases. Whether that will actually happen is still in limbo. Arizona lawmakers may repeal the 1864 ban. In the meantime, Governor Newsom says he's getting ahead and preparing for that possibility, announcing that he wants to allow Arizona doctors to provide abortions in California. CAP Radio healthcare reporter Kate Wolf joins us with how this could work. Hey, Kate.
Hi, Vicki.
So before we get into California's response, we got to dive into what ignited all of this to begin with. Tell us more about the Arizona State Supreme Court's ruling and how this all came to be.
So when Roe v. Wade was overturned, states were given the go-ahead essentially to implement laws that were on the books. And this 1864 near-total ban had remained dormant for a long time. It had never been repealed. And it had been blocked from being implemented by a court injunction. So there were laws on when you could get an abortion in Arizona. The 1864 ban was essentially being ignored. In 2022, Arizona's then attorney general persuaded a state judge to lift the injunction blocking that ban. And Planned Parenthood sued, and they've been duking it out for the past 2 years in court. And earlier this month, the Supreme Court, all of those members appointed by Republican governors, voted that the injunction could be lifted and that dormant law could go back into effect.
Currently, what abortions are allowed in Arizona?
So as of right now, you can get an abortion up to 15 weeks and 6 days into your pregnancy. And there are exceptions for medical emergencies, but not for rape or incest. And this ban was enacted in 2022 following the Dobbs decision.
Okay, so currently it can be 15 weeks and 6 days with some exceptions for medical emergencies. But now the state Supreme Court ruled an even stricter abortion ruling. When could that ruling take effect?
That wouldn't take effect until the end of May at the earliest.
It doesn't end there, though, really, because in the weeks that have followed, this was earlier this month, Arizona lawmakers are debating whether to step in. What is being discussed?
Right after this happened, there was a total uproar and calls for the state legislature to repeal the ban. They tried repeatedly, but were blocked by Republicans in the legislature. There was movement last week when both sides of the legislature signaled that they were interested in repealing the ban. And the House actually passed a bill when three Republican lawmakers broke ranks. And that bill could be voted on in the Senate as early as Wednesday of this week, so in 2 days, and very much could pass if some Republicans again decide to break ranks.
So as we wait for a potentially big development in Arizona later this week, we're essentially in this limbo period in that state. So what is the motivation behind Governor Newsom and the Legislative Women's Caucus?
So Newsom and the Legislative Women's Caucus say it's just unacceptable that doctors could face 2 to 5 year stints in prison for just caring for their patients. And that's what this near total ban would do. It would make it so that anyone who provides an abortion would be subject to a 2 to 5 year prison stint. So they want to put their money where their mouth is when it comes to upholding California as an abortion haven and want to encourage Arizona providers and patients to come to the state to get the procedure done.
Okay, well then what are they proposing to actually do?
So they want to allow doctors who are licensed in Arizona to get an expedited license to practice in California, a temporary license, to practice on their patients from their patients slash patients from Arizona. So they wouldn't be practicing on patients from California. And this would be through the end of November.
I mean, that sounds simple and just kind of if you take it from a surface level, but I would imagine logistically that could be a lift. So how would this actually be possible?
That was also my question. I was at the announcement of this new piece of legislation and I was like, I don't totally know how this is going to work. So I asked, the closest abortion clinics in California to the Arizona border are in El Centro and one's in Indio and Palm Springs. And those are 3.5, 4.5 hour drives from Phoenix. So yeah, I asked, how would this work? And we heard from Dr. Tanya Spiritos. She's the president of the California Medical Association.
The idea being that those physicians who may have advertising, that may have connections, network support in Arizona, would be able to spread the word that they are now practicing out of an existing office in California. And I'm certain that there will be alliances made also with community clinics and with Planned Parenthood.
So it's a little light on the specifics, but, you know, telemedicine and in-clinic procedures would be able to be performed by Arizona doctors on Arizona patients.
You know, and doing a shift like this, I would just imagine there's a dollar sign attached to this. So how would this be funded?
Right. Governor Gavin Newsom spoke with A. Martinez actually last week on NPR about, and A. asked, you know, would this be a burden on California taxpayers? And Newsom said it kind of already is. It's kind of already that California taxpayers are paying for some of these, this extra load that California is taking on from people coming across the border to get an abortion. But there's a lot of movement to get like grassroots funding for this stuff. There's a group called Red Wine and Blue, which is a cohort of suburban women who apparently kind of came up out of nowhere. I'm super interested to do a story about it, but they created an Arizona Freedom Trust that will raise funds to compensate Arizona providers. Newsom said they already have $100,000 committed, and they're hoping to raise more funds for that.
And that fund would essentially help Arizona doctors practice on Arizona patients in California.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, what do Arizona leaders say? The governor, the state legislature, about California's announcement?
So the California lawmakers who put this bill forward say this was actually in response to a call by Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays. And they say it's been crafted in conjunction with leaders in Arizona. So we haven't really heard too much publicly in response to this move, but California lawmakers insist that that it's been done in collaboration with them.
And it's important to note that Governor Newsom is speaking on this behalf, but it is a piece of legislation. So you do need state lawmakers and their buy-in. So where does this legislation stand now?
Right, exactly. So it's not going into law right now. It needs to be passed by the legislature and needs 2/3 of the vote. If that happens, which it almost certainly will, it'll be signed by Governor Newsom and there's an urgency clause, so it would go into effect right away. It's headed to be read in the Assembly Committee on Business and Professions because it deals with doctors. And they meet on Tuesday mornings, tomorrow morning, so we could see some movement there soon.
What happens, Kate, if Arizona lawmakers, because there's another potential big development at the Arizona State Legislature on Wednesday, what if they end up passing a repeal of this Civil War era abortion ban from 1864? So if that happens, would this just be wasted time and energy on California's behalf?
It could be a little bit. I think Newsom's office is trying to say, you know, this will be an important stopgap no matter what happens, because it could take a while for that law to be repealed. So this could be very important in the case maybe that there's an Arizona doctor that needs to provide an abortion for their patient in the meantime. But they say it'll be a useful tool even if Arizona lawmakers do repeal it. It'll be proof of concept.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with CAP Radio healthcare reporter Kate Wolf about Governor Newsom and the Legislative Women's Caucus wanting to allow Arizona doctors to provide abortions in California following Arizona's potential ban on nearly all abortions. So there is also an argument by some leaders, even critics of the governor and Democratic leaders, that this time and energy could essentially be better spent on other pressing priorities directly facing California. Did you hear any of that?
Yeah, there was a question asked during the press conference about how there has been local opposition in certain California counties to getting abortion clinics stood up there, for instance, in places like Visalia. And Senator Nancy Skinner, who, you know, is a member of the Legislative Women's Caucus, said that there is legislation in the pipe coming down to ease some of those barriers and to expedite that process. So I think it's very true that California is an abortion haven, but, and I said that in quotes, but I think the realities of actually how much access does exist and how much local opposition can totally block expansion really does exist in California.
Yeah, and there's also national threats as well to California wanting to be able to provide abortion care in the state, because the Supreme Court, and we've had these conversations on Insider, are also taking up other cases that could impact California, regardless if it's codified into the state constitution.
Exactly right. The conversations that are happening right now about mifepristone are particularly salient for places like California.
Has California done something like this before, though, taken on another state like Arizona in this way?
As far as I know, this is a first, allowing a targeted group of providers to provide services here in California, and really emphasizing that. But I think Newsom is on the offense, right? He's being pretty adversarial about this issue, the abortion issue. His political action committee was running TV ads in Alabama that show women being pulled over and forced to take pregnancy tests on the side of the road to prove they're not leaving the state to get an abortion, which is pretty evocative ad. But he says he's trying to highlight the reality of some of these policies for the residents of those states.
The optics can also be seen as a national strategy by Governor Newsom. What political undertones does this have?
Yeah, abortion is going to be a big thing in the election this year. And I think that Newsom sees a real opportunity there to show his you know, firm stance on abortion. When someone asked him about it during the press conference, this is how he responded.
But I don't look at it as from a technical political. There's some cynicism when we look at it purely from a political frame. This is just about basic decency and humanity. It's about respect for women and girls. I mean, this is, as Jen says, it's about power and control, period.
And when he says Jen there, he's referring to his wife, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, who also came out to speak about the issue.
Yeah, who's also the first partner of California. What resources are currently available for someone out of state who wants to come to California for abortion care that isn't available where they live?
People can find resources on abortion.ca.gov, as you mentioned. But, you know, some of these funds are limited. They run out pretty quickly. On the supply side, I'd say California is touting two big funds, one to help nonprofits do the work of helping people who are coming from both in and out of state. It's called the Abortion Practical Support Fund, and it helps nonprofits help others with travel, lodging, childcare, food, other supports. And there's also something called the Uncompensated Care Fund, which goes to providers and gives grants to healthcare providers who want to help people who don't have coverage get abortions. So those are two on the supply side.
Kate, thank you.
Thanks so much, Vicki.
That is CAP Radio healthcare reporter Kate Wolf discussing a recent move by Governor Newsom and the Legislative Women's Caucus to allow Arizona doctors to provide abortions in California in response to the Arizona State Supreme Court ruling that bans nearly all abortions. Up next, the latest episode of Food Network's new program, Best Bite in Town, visited the city of Placerville in El Dorado County. We'll speak with some of the restaurants about their experience competing for the title on national TV. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. 3 weeks ago, the new Food Network show Best Bite in Town with executive producer Guy Fieri highlighted the food scene in Davis in its very first episode. Now, the newest episode put a spotlight on the city of Placerville in El Dorado County. Host Noah Kapp and his bike club of chefs, they tour six local restaurants. They pick three finalists to have their signature dishes presented to a panel of judges. And there were a lot of different flavors to choose from traditional Italian cuisine to barbecue, even oysters with a southern twist. The episode aired this weekend, and we are now joined by three of the participants. Mary Fulmer is the owner of Hog Wild Barbecue. Brandon Gunther is the chef and owner of Rocker Oysterfeller's Kitchen and Saloon. And Simona Salvatore is the owner of Amor Mio Italian Bistro. Good afternoon. Thanks for making the time.
Hi.
And congratulations on the experience. It must have been a lot of fun and maybe a little bit of stressful, but all in good spirit. I would love to start off by learning more about each of you and your restaurants, what brought you all to Placerville and what inspires your cuisine. Mary, I'll start with you. Hog Wild Barbecue.
Yeah. Well, we actually purchased the business in 2018, so we're on year six. I was in the corporate world. My husband was already a retired cabinet builder and business owner. And so we left the corporate world and looked for something that we really enjoyed in our youth days. And now we get to spend our days with lots of youthful people that are just very talented. We have a number of pit masters and just a fabulous, fabulous team.
Why barbecue?
Well, we were customers for a bit and really enjoyed it. It's not easy. Our pit masters, we are generally there about 5:30 in the morning. Things like brisket alone is about 16 hours low and slow smoked. So it is a arduous process to make, but we love it. It's a lot of fun.
That time is very well spent because that's why it is delicious. Simona, how about you? Amor Mio Italian Bistro. How did you land in Placerville?
We opened the restaurant in December 2021. I was born and I am living for my total life in Rome, Italy. But my husband loves USA. He worked in USA. We moved from Vegas because first he worked in Vegas. After we moved in Placerville, just because he has a friend. Placerville is a nice city. We decided to move in Placerville and open the restaurant. I love Italian food. I have every time passion for Italian food. And we decided to open a real authentic restaurant where people can try and taste real flavor from my country. And it's a very nice city, Placerville, and people are very friendly and beautiful community. Restaurant was good.
Where did your love for cooking come from? Did it come from your family?
Oh, yes. I all the time passion for food, for good product. I started to cook when I was very young, maybe 9, 10 years. My grandmother, my father, my mom, all family love cook, love good product, good food. And we have another place in Rome, where another small restaurant. And we decide to remake the same in Placerville. And I love creativity in my food, not just traditional food and fusion with new Italian style food. I love to create a new dish every month, new dish. People can taste different flavor, traditional Italian food, a different flavor, my creation. I know my English is not perfect, so I'm sorry if sometimes...
It is just fine.
Okay.
It is
and
wonderful.
I'm so sorry for all people try to understand when I talk.
I perfectly understand you, and I know others do too. A light bulb just went off in my head. If you have a restaurant in Rome, they can be their sister restaurants. I'm thinking down the road, you should plan a trip for people in Placerville to go check out your restaurant in Rome. What an experience that would be. Brandon, tell us about your restaurant. I love the name, Rocker Oysterfeller's Kitchen and Saloon.
Thank you. A real tongue twister.
How did you land in Placerville?
We landed in Placerville because we have family in Placerville, and we've been coming up for years, and we just love the area so much. And it's actually a major corridor between the other restaurant we opened back in 2006, which is located on the coast just outside of Bodega Bay in a little town called Valley Ford. And between Bodega Bay and South Lake Tahoe is a major kind of corridor that just, you know, we get a lot of crossover people, customers from the coast going up to Tahoe, and, you know, people, customers from Tahoe coming down to the coast. It's kind of a big back and forth. So we decided we'd open one on that side.
Well, you just answered my second question, why oysters? But that is the prime location, that part of the California coast when it comes to oysters.
Absolutely. We get all of our oysters fresh from Tomales Bay. We have a lot of families that we've been working with that farm oysters in the bay. So we've been working with them for a number of years, and we decided to bring it up to Placerville because there's nothing quite like it.
What are some of the recipes that you're most proud of at your restaurant?
Well, we have a buttermilk fried chicken that's been on the menu for a long time. It's an old family recipe. My wife is from Gulf Coast, Texas, so I grew up, spent a lot of my life cooking with her grandmother and her father and her brother and brothers-in-laws and everything out in the Gulf Coast, and just kind of really fell in love with the cuisine. So the buttermilk fried chicken is one of our grandmother's recipes. And then we also have a really fun bourbon and molasses braised pork shank that's on the menu on top of grits. We bring in our grits from South Carolina, and we do a cheesy grit with carrots and turnips, and that's a really nice one.
Yeah.
A number of different things that we're very proud of.
Having this conversation around lunchtime is not a good idea. Oh, that sounds delicious. Placerville is just a wonderful, I love Placerville, a gold rush city in El Dorado County. It also is tight-knit. Brandon, I would imagine you've probably heard of the restaurants that you competed against on the show.
Absolutely. We've been to all of them.
And how about you, Mary? Were you aware of your competitors?
Absolutely, we were, and knew that it was going to be a stiff competition, but was really excited about highlighting the food scene in Placerville because it really is very diverse, and as are the people. And of course, the people, as Brandon mentioned, coming up and down Highway 50 and stopping in, going to Tahoe and on the way back. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Simona, when did the Food Network reach out to you? How did you first become aware that there was going to be a TV show and they wanted you to compete on it?
When the man for TV show called my husband, I was in Italy, and my husband told me, "Oh, some people call me." In the first moment, I don't think seriously, but after I understand, we participate in the show, and we are very lucky because we opened just 2 years ago, and people love our food, and we decide to participate. And honestly, it's a beautiful experience. And I have an opportunity to know the other people work in the restaurant and talk about the restaurant is sacrifice. It's a passion, but it's a sacrifice, you know. But it's a beautiful experience. And it's good for Placerville too, because Placerville is a small town, beautiful town, but small town. They need people stop when they travel between Tahoe and San Francisco, and it's opportunity to find different food, good food, and for all flavor.
Given that the Food Network is obviously pretty well known, and especially profiling restaurants, Mary, when they reached out to you about competing, I mean, was this something that you ever envisioned doing with your barbecue restaurant?
We didn't. We actually, when they reached out to us, they had told us that customers of ours had submitted us for Triple D, the other show that Guy is so well known for. And they said, but we are going to have a show in Placerville, and we're premiering 6 restaurants, and we'd really love for you to be one of them. And I immediately jumped at the chance. I said, absolutely. What do we need to do? We'd be happy to be on a Guy Fieri show, any show, and especially a new one. That sounds great.
Yeah. Brandon, what went through your mind when producers reached out to you?
I believe my email was something along the lines of, is this some sort of sick joke? I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it was true, because there's so much spam going around all over the place. And they wrote back and they said, absolutely it is. And we're super pumped about that. We're really excited to be a part of that.
Yeah. You're like, I'm not going to click on that link, you know, because it seems fishy.
Exactly.
But it was the real deal. How did you go into mentally preparing? I mean, competing is different than getting in the, I mean, the restaurant business is hard enough as it is, but then you're under the pressure of competing against other restaurants. Brandon, how did you prepare about what you wanted to showcase and profile under those high pressure constraints?
You know, I don't know how much you can prepare for something like that. It's, you know, it was something I'd never done before personally, and it was a whole new experience. And, you know, I've been cooking my whole life, as I'm sure all the other contestants probably have too, but so that wasn't a big deal. I'm very comfortable. My kitchen is my happy place, so I feel very comfortable there. But being in front of a camera, I've been on, you know, a couple times before, and just that lens zooming in, that giant fisheye lens looking at you, I just, you know, you start stuttering and losing your mind. It kind of wipes it out. But the more and more you do it, and it was a three day of filming. So it was 3 full days, well, not 3 full days, but 3 very long filming sessions. So the longer it went on and the more comfortable you got with everything, plus the crew was extremely professional and definitely knew what they were doing. So they made it very easy on us, I think, in my opinion.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Simona Salvatore from Amore Mio, Brandon Gunther from Rocker Oysterfellers, and Mary Fulmer from Hog Wild Barbecue. All 3 restaurants were featured in the latest episode of the new Food Network show Best Bite in Town, which aired last Friday over the weekend, and it was located in highlighting the city of Placerville in El Dorado County. So let's get into what you prepared. Mary, what dish did you prepare for the host and the judges?
Well, we all had the opportunity to prepare 2 different dishes. The first one was our Angry Pitmaster, and it is a brioche bun that's topped with our 16-hour low and slow smoked brisket, our pulled pork, and then on top of that is your choice of cheese, jalapeno peppers, our homemade coleslaw, and just a really yummy, very tall sandwich that is very full, very filling. And so that was our first one, and that was wonderful, served with 3 different barbecue sauces, your choice of barbecue sauce. And then our second one was actually a dessert that is a 4-berry cobbler. It was one of my mother's desserts recipes. We use all of her dessert recipes in the restaurant. And so you've got to finish off wonderful barbecue with a wonderful dessert.
Did the change in pace and that added adrenaline and pressure, did it make something that I think you could probably do that in your sleep? They're popular items. It comes from your family. Did it make it harder to make?
No, because the crew is wonderful. I mean, it wasn't live for one thing, so that helped a lot. We ended up filming for about 3 days. So, but no, it actually they were really wonderful to work with.
Simona, what did you make at Amore Mio?
We make the special lasagna is the white lasagna. The name is the Pope's lasagna, just because remember the color white of the dressing, dress Pope. And we make with handmade pasta, with egg flour, traditional pasta. We use it for lasagna and bechamel sauce handmade, and sausage, mushroom, two different style of mushroom, two different style of sausage, and smoked cheese, Italian cheese. We bake it, and finally it's ready. And the other dish was the eggplant bolognese. It's the traditional eggplant parmigiana, but we decide to put inside the bolognese sauce we make for three different style of meat. It's Italian sausage and pork and beef, and cook a long time for 3-4 hours before to be ready, the bolognese sauce. After we fry eggplant with egg and flour, and the slice of eggplant, slice of bolognese sauce, mozzarella and parmigiano, bake in the oven. It's not fast, you know, It's very, the TV demand for poor men have to stay a long time to wait the dish was ready.
I'm sure they appreciated all the smells because I think it sounds delicious. So I don't think they probably minded watching you do all of that, because that's a lot of work and it just sounds delicious. How was it for you having that TV experience and having the cameras and all of that, in addition to, you know, just doing what you love, cooking in the kitchen?
Okay. I love cook, honestly. I love food. I love eat. I love the best product. I want to use just best product, but it's not easy for me staying in the front of camera, and especially because in last August, my English was less good than now, and not easy to talk too much in English, and it's not easy. Everything, but beautiful experience. People were very nice. The chef stay with us is beautiful, very gentleman. He tried to help me with my English, stop why I don't understand the question. And all people was very nice, honestly. Beautiful experience. Maybe now I know what is staying on TV. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of food shows, so someone may be calling you again. Yes. So that is definitely a good trial run. Brandon, what did you make?
Vicky, you were right about airing this episode during the lunch hour. Is there time for a quick lunch break by chance, or keep moving on?
My stomach is growling.
I know. It sounded so good. We did our Dirty South, which is a pile of Kennebec fries with melted pimento cheese that we make in-house with fire-roasted peppers, and a sterile gold cheese, which is one of the cheeses from Sonoma County that we bring up. We make our own pimento cheese, goes over that, and we chop up brisket, which is funny because Mary had brisket on the episode too, so we were both smoking low and slow. So we chop up brisket on top of the pimento cheese, and then we have like pickled jalapenos, and it gets a little bit of crema. So it's like a Southern poutine kind of style, play on that. The other dish that we did was our house rocker Oysterfeller, which is, you know, are named after us. And it's a take on the oyster Rockefeller, of course, but it's a cream cheese base with wilted arugula, toasted fennel seed Pernod, dash of Pernod, and then it gets a cornbread crust over the top of it. And then it's cooked on the grill. So that's our kind of our house thing, and that's the one that they chose.
Well, and you actually moved to the next round, the final round. How was that experience advancing to the final round of the competition?
Oh my God, it was so fun. It was so fun. They set up a huge stage down at the Bell Tower right in downtown Placerville, and they set up seats, and they had a full live audience down the center of Main Street, which is really funny.
I highly recommend people check out Main Street in Placerville if you haven't.
It's gorgeous. Yeah, it's such a cool, that's what, you know, drew us to that town, is that old feeling. You know, for California, it's very old. For the world, maybe not so much, but that gold rush feel, Placerville's managed to keep with all the old buildings and that historical aspect. So we do love that town very much. It's such a cool place to be.
How about you, Mary? You advanced your barbecue too.
We did. The Angry Pitmaster was our winner for Chef Joe when he presented us. So that was awesome. It was just a great experience.
What has the response been from your customers and the community? I know it just aired on Friday, but I think there must have been just a lot of excitement and a lot of pride from your neighbors and customers about, you know, being on national TV and your awesome food.
Yes. A line out the door lately.
Good for business. And you too, Simona?
Me too, yes. My customers are very proud of us, correctly. And yes, my whole community, honestly, is happy. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are very happy. Six restaurants in the final moment stay on TV is good for city, is good for all stores stay in the city, in the town.
Yeah, Brandon, what kind of response have you received? I mean, it was just a cool experience, I would imagine, down on Main Street. I am sure it was the talk of the town, at least this weekend, especially when it actually premiered.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, a lot of people in town didn't know what was going on. Only a handful of people really saw what was going on downtown, I think. And then now all the energy as the show started coming into play and Food Network started posting about it, and everyone's kind of getting out there and talking about the show coming and being in Placerville was you felt the energy levels just kind of really amp up.
Yeah.
Even before the airing. And now, it's such a cool thing for Placerville to have had this and such a lucky and deserving community, because there's so much good food in that little town in the foothills. So I don't know. I think it was so awesome for Placerville, and I'm so proud of, our staff for sticking in there and doing such a great job all this time, and especially with the new demand.
I also think it's really cool that this is a new show, Best Bite in Town. I mean, the first episode was Davis in Yolo County, and then now we have Placerville in El Dorado County. I mean, just as someone who lives in the area, I think there's a lot of pride that goes in highlighting, smaller cities, but really that they have a large, yummy footprint, when it comes to food. Y'all know how to cook.
So true. Thank you.
Sure.
And we have great ingredients too coming out of the Sacramento Delta. We've got some of the best food, in the area growing in our backyard. So that doesn't hurt.
Yeah. Well, Mary, Brandon, and Simona, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I say thank you for the conversation, but now I'm starving. So yeah, it'll be a good lunch. Mary Fulmer is the owner of Hog Wild Barbecue. Brandon Gunther is the chef and owner of Rocker Oysterfeller's Kitchen and Saloon. And Simona Salvatore is the owner of Amore Mio Italian Bistro. All three restaurants were featured in the latest episode of the Food Network's newest show, Best Bite in Town. It aired this weekend on Friday, and it spotlighted the food scene in Placerville in El Dorado County. Still ahead, temperatures are warming and it's kicking off an annual tradition along the lower American River, rafting season. American River Raft Rentals joins us about their opening day and celebrating its 50th anniversary. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. This month kicked off a popular time on the Lower American River. From late spring through summer, rafts fill the scenic American River Parkway just 15 miles east of downtown Sacramento. A popular route starts off at the Sunrise Recreation Area, ending at Riverbend Park. There, you will likely see people in yellow rafts, perhaps with water cannons and a speaker in tow, enjoying the self-guided beginner float. American River Raft Rentals is the largest rafting company in the area and has been around since 1974. Their opening day was April 20th, and they are celebrating a big milestone, 50 years. Kent Hansen is the co-owner of American River Raft Rentals and joins us as they embark and celebrate their 50th anniversary. Congratulations and welcome.
Thank you so much.
So when did you get interested in rafting?
When I was 5 years old, actually.
And I would imagine it was a family affair?
It was. My dad actually worked for the company I now co-own, and he was a whitewater rafting guide. So I started whitewater kayaking at 5, whitewater kayaking at 12, and basically in 2010 met the founder's daughter, bartending at the Folsom Hotel Saloon in Folsom. She invited me to work there when she found out about my recreational background, and the rest is history.
Well, I mean, 50 years is a long time, you know, to be in business. What do you love about being part of American River Raft Rentals?
I get to provide a service that I'm passionate about, and I know we do a great job doing it, introducing recreation to families so that we can have future generations of nature lovers.
For someone who hasn't rafted before, can you explain the experience? I mean, because you take in so many people, like every summer. I mean, you see all the yellow rafts floating down the lower American River. What is the experience like for someone who hasn't done it before?
Well, you did mention we're just 15 miles east of downtown Sacramento, but we are in the American River Parkway corridor, so you are completely submersed in nature. You're surrounded by the fauna and the wildlife, and when you're out there on that river on our relaxing six-mile float, you can really forget about everyday life and feel like you're on a true vacation, and enjoying the river while it takes you downstream has something for everybody, whether you're out there to celebrate with friends or out there to relax and take in the pristine nature.
Hmm. When it comes to the 50 years and you take a look back and you've known about this company since you were a kid, how has it grown over the last 50 years?
Leaps and bounds. When I started working there in 2010, everything was done on pen and paper. And I started managing with another friend, Josh, who got us a point of sale and, online computer reservation program. And from there, it's taken off. And through COVID, we had to adapt and bring in new processes to, you know, mainstream things even quicker. And so everything's just, it's still coming along so quickly and so wonderfully. While we're doing something that's in nature, we're also introducing technology. This year we have a new app that'll be launching as well, and that's going to be great because it'll promote more safety. We'll have location services for guests and even be able to do interpretational tours where people can learn about the river and all of the wildlife that gets to enjoy it as well.
Yeah, improving the user experience.
Correct.
Especially
yeah.
When you're on the river. When you founded it in 1974, did it just take off, or was it more of an uphill battle?
That's a funny story, because in 1974, when the founder basically purchased the property from his dad and was floating down the river day when he had the idea, it did start slow for a few years. And he had a friend that ran a commercial on TV. And from then on, he's barely been able to keep up. And so luckily, we are able to enjoy the fruits of his labor and build off of that to make this company even more successful.
I've floated down the lower American River. My husband and I, we have our own raft, but we do put in around the same place where a lot of your rafters put in. And it can get packed in a very good way. It's a very popular raft rental company. What does the float down the river look like? Are these mostly beginners that are renting the raft and going down the American River?
Yeah, each year we take on thousands of new rafters because we average about 8 people to a raft. And so somebody new is always joining to find out about it because our rafts range in size from 2 to 4 person rafts all the way up to 12 person rafts. And so we even do groups of 350 plus for catered team building events and things like that. But we're getting a lot of new guests every single year, but we also are getting a lot of return customers that want to do their once a summer float, or you take advantage of our loyalty programs where we have a frequent floater and your fourth rental is free. And we do a ton of business that way as well. So some people are coming, you know, a few times a month even.
Yeah, it's a good intro float as well. You know, it's I guess there's technically a rapid, the San Juan Rapid, but it's nothing like, you know, whitewater rafting. How long is the float and how long does it usually take for someone?
Our 6-mile float generally takes about 3 hours. With this year's perfect flows, it's going to be a nice 3-hour float all summer long where the paddles are really just in the boat for steering. You can count on the current to get you down without having to work too hard.
Yeah, let's dive into more. What are conditions looking like for this summer? Because we did have a pretty good winter.
Yeah, this is a perfect winter with the snow packed and the reservoirs full, and we're going to have perfect average flows all season long. Right now we're at 4,000 CFS, which stands for cubic feet of water per second, and that's right at average and a perfect float time. We love 3,500 to 4,000 for getting people down without having to worry about, you know, paddling along the way to get in, because people, they're generally out there to enjoy each other's company and enjoy nature, not there to get the workout in the raft.
What was opening weekend like on April 20th?
Well, we sent out our email to all of our loyal customers from previous years, and we had a great opening weekend. Everybody enjoyed themselves. Weather right now is mild, so it's like, you know, when it gets to be 100 degrees outside, sometimes that is too hot in some people's opinion. So right now, with temperatures in mid-70s, we're ready for rafting. If it's any colder than that, we'll close. So we're, you know, always keeping an eye on the weather, and that's why it's good to make reservations at raftrentals.com so that we can contact you if conditions do change. But right now, we anticipate perfect flows all season long. All we're waiting for is this perfect weather that we know we get every single year.
I mean, and you are at the mercy of Mother Nature. I can only imagine when going through difficult years of drought or maybe even too much water, that can be significant for how it impacts your company.
Sure. I like to say that the last 3 years since we took over the business, it has been character building. We started with COVID, and then we had the biggest drought in 50 years, and then it was followed by the highest water in since 77. And so faced with all of those challenges, we adapted and found out how to keep the business alive and busy and fun for everybody. And now I think we're ready for anything.
Would you say that this year is the sweet spot when it comes to river conditions?
It's the year we've been waiting for, so we're ecstatic.
Good. I guess third or fourth year is a charm. What should people bring when they're going for a float down the Lower American River if it's their first time going to your company?
Yeah, we want everybody to bring plenty of sunblock, which means, you know, the sunglasses hat, the sunblock that you spread on, and foot protection. So whether it's water shoes or an old pair of sneakers or sandals, because the beaches can be rocky, slippery, and hot. And other than that, we want you to bring an ice chest, just no glass allowed, but all your favorite food and drinks. And the only thing you have to be aware of is no alcohol on the major holiday weekends, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. Otherwise, you did mention those water cannons, and when it gets busy out there on Saturdays, everybody's squirting each other to cool off, and that's one of the really good times out there. So all of that stuff is available in our River Mart as well for people who didn't plan ahead, but those would be the main things to bring. Lots of water.
And it is a self-guided beginner float, but I mean, all rivers should be, and all portions of a river should be respected. I mean, there is a safety component as well. And sometimes when you're having a lot of fun, you can underestimate what river conditions are like. What advice do you have for someone that is going down, and just so that, of course, they enjoy themselves, but they also keep safety in mind?
Yes, always wear a life jacket, no matter what, even when you're within 10 feet of the shoreline, because a lot of accidents happen when people are along the shore and slip in not wearing the life jacket. Another thing is making sure that, you know, somebody like you'd mentioned, you come down on your own raft. Make sure your raft is intended for a river. A lot of people try to bring out floats that are more for backyard pools or lakes that are not intended for rivers. Our equipment has multiple chambers, and it's very durable and thick material, unlike the vinyl little Costco pool floats that can pop easily and then leave you in a predicament. So the life jackets and good equipment is my main advice.
Yep, when I have done that float, you see those branches sticking out of the water, and sometimes you'll see, you know, a floating casualty, like an inner tube that's stuck there. And I always wonder how those people fared, you know, because it is not as durable as a river raft.
Yep, correct.
When is peak season?
Memorial Day to Labor Day is truly our busy season where we're barely holding on.
Do you ever sell out?
We do not sell out. We love to say that we never run out of rafts. We do recommend the reservations, though, because certain size rafts become more popular on certain days. We will get you on the water no matter what for walk-ins, but making a reservation is so easy up until, like, you know, we say that 48 hours in advance is plenty of time to get whatever you need for the weekend ahead.
And it's important to also let people know if it's going to be their first time, there is a way to get back to where your car is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we provide bus shuttle back from the end point. So you basically rent, you raft, and then we got your return.
You mentioned this at the start of how you've been, you know, just with the waters and since you were a kid. It's you have deep roots with your family. You know, for those who are more adventurous, I mean, and it is close by in Placer and El Dorado counties, you can experience whitewater rafting, which is a very different experience than the lower American River. You have the North Fork and the South Fork. Why do you think our area is just such a great spot for enjoying the river?
Well, you know, we are central to so many places. You know, we get a lot of people out here from the Bay Area, and then everyone from Sacramento loves having us in their backyard. But it's truly the American River Parkway, having that 30-plus mile corridor where you get to experience so much nature. I mean, I can't believe the animals I see when I'm out there right now. Like, the poppies and the lupines are in full bloom, and you can see tons of fish and turtles and all the birds. I mean, we see bald eagles and hawks and peregrine falcons. It's crazy to think that this is all in Sacramento.
Ken, thanks for stopping by and congratulations for 50 years.
Thank you so much.
Ken Hansen is the co-owner of American River Raft Rentals. They are located on the Lower American River in the American River Parkway in Sacramento County. And they just kicked off their season and they're celebrating their 50th anniversary. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the conversation, you can email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Sarit Lashinsky and Jen Picard. Our digital producer is Chris Feltz. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great Monday. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.